But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, hello everybody, and welcome on back to episode,
267, I want to say.
Yeah, that works. Yeah, that works. Sure. Yeah, 267, climbing our way to episode 300, where we call it quits, and that's the end. We do 300, and we're finally done.
We burned all the bridges that we built.
Correct.
Call out people that we really shouldn't, who will probably come back at us harder.
Right.
Mock people for their religions and sexual orientation.
Call former guests, tell them off on the podcast, just, you know, call them in the middle of the night, late night podcast, like 3-4 in the morning, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Go after the ones that didn't call us back, you know, everybody.
Exactly.
I feel the final podcast should be us in the parking lot outside of Sean Kemp's house screaming at him.
We could probably find him. I'm sure we could find him roaming the streets of Seattle somewhere, scoring cocaine and other goodies for the family.
He'll be out on the field during the Seahawks game just running around. They're like, I didn't know he played football. He doesn't. He just hopped up.
You gotta feel for a guy like Sean Kemp. This time of year has got to be tough for him. He's got to be, I mean, his Christmas list for his kids has to be huge. You know, if he's giving every kid a present, that's, you know, he's got like 9, 10, 11 kids, something like that.
Yeah, what was the Jets quarterback, Cromartie, who had 13 kids with 11 women? And all. I mean, that's got to be a tough order, especially when they know you got money in your pocket. You can't play the whole, I'm hurting this year, and by the way, I'm picking up my $30,000 NFL pension check now.
I had a friend who was a cop in the town that Cromartie lived when he was a Jet, and he said that there's just domestics called there like twice a month. Like, they would call the cops, and he said Cromartie was like a cool guy. He said he would just be like, oh, I don't know, she's crazy, and the woman would just be like yelling in the background. So I don't know what the truth is there, but I do know probably not the most functional household, if I was to imagine.
Well, if I kind of recall, I believe the cops who used to come for complaints on OJ said kind of the same thing, where it's like, yeah, he's a cool guy. Girl's crazy. I don't know what she complaining about. I don't know whatever happened to that Nicole person, but I'm sure she deserved whatever she got.
She's very cutthroat, if you know what I mean. She's very she's very to the point. You know, she'll take a stab in any direction. That you know, that's the kind of woman she is.
Yeah, exactly. And the only thing worse than her are random waiters that come around with sunglasses.
So, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans, everybody. We are a weekly or so podcast. Like I said, we're, you know, near 300 episodes of this thing. So, there is plenty if we didn't get an episode out quick enough for you, a.k.a. Dom. You know, our loyal listener that listens probably to every single episode we've ever done. You know, if I don't get it up, I get a stupid text message like, hey, where's VS? I'm like, dude, it's coming. He's like, all right, thank you. He's like,
now hold on. Yeah. Now you rag on me like I with my nicknames and all. He's giving the show. He's like, he doesn't have time to write out Verbal Shenanigans. No, where my VS at?
That's the kind of guy Dom is. He's too lazy to type out the other like 18 letters in Verbal Shenanigans. So VS, I feel like, is the max potential of his fingers. Like, he's just like, ugh, all right, like a sloth, you know, like. I just feel like he would not exert the amount of energy needed to type out that full text message. So VS is good enough for him.
I feel our goal for 2020 is to find somebody like on our DCN podcast network or Denville Radio, mm-hmm. who's a loyal fan, and just totally stop talking about Dom and only bring up how much we'd love this new person. I'm sure we're bound to find one. It's near impossible to say everything we put out, we can't find a second person.
I'm waiting for that new loyal listener. That's all. I don't need hundreds of fans and people actually listening to it. I need like one person other than a guy I knew from high school checking in and being like, great episode, guys, you know.
It's one of those great episodes. Yeah, you say that every week. Shut up. Stop it.
So, so we put this out basically every week and talk about life, play games, interview. Most importantly, we interview interesting people. We've been doing that for a couple of years straight now. So it limits the amount of time you have to hear us try to come up with content or create something entertaining, which, you know, it happens. It happens once in a blue moon. Once in a blue moon, we swing, we make contact with the ball. But the rest of it, we're a sub 200 hitter. You know,
we're that guy who always ends up on some team's bench. And then in the 12th inning, you see us come up, and you're like, God damn it!
Right, we're
going to the 13th.
We're the defensive outfielder that they put in with the up 2-1 in the 9th inning. We go in to play outfield just to try to close out the game. We don't really provide anything that gets us to the dance. We just try to jump on at the end.
Yeah. Somewhat in this baseball analogy, did you know that Oakland A's had a guy who made like 176 appearances and he never hit and he never went to the field?
Really? He's a pitcher?
Or yeah, it was in like hitter? He was literally listed as a pinch runner on his baseball card. He was this guy. I guess he was like a track star, and they're experimenting with, like, you know, people to put on the bench. So they literally brought him in just to steal bases, and he was an average base runner at best. Like, literally hit the league for average percentage stolen bases, but he did end up with a ring without ever picking up a bat,
attaboy,
throwing a pitch, or going into the field.
That's even better than being Matt Cassel. Matt Cassel live off four games for basically 10 years straight. Or Matt Flynn. Remember him? He really lived off of like
he lived off of two games, and it was two games that were meaningless. I mean, at least with Castle, he got a full season, and Matt Flynn literally just, and then he was so terrible. Like, the second he got that big contract deal, they're like, yeah, just sit on the bench.
Yeah, I think quarterbacks, like, that it just shows you how desperate teams are for a good quarterback. That If you could have a quarter of a good season, step in and do it, you could really set yourself up for like 3, 4, or 5 years later. It's really interesting. At least get a job.
Way further. I mean, let's look at Josh McCown. Yep. He's 39, like on his 11th team.
Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick, who's beaten the Eagles on 7 different teams. even Jay Cutler, like, he retired and he was going to go into broadcasting, and Miami threw him a ton of money to come out because one of their quarterbacks got injured. So
Case Keenum seems to be that guy now.
Yeah, he's gonna end up in like Tampa or Jacksonville or something like that. And he's just gonna keep going, and it makes you, again, as our fantasy guest list grows, we go, where are you, Jamarcus Russell, where you couldn't find a way to get back in the NFL?
I like how our clientele is like Sean Kemp, a known like drug addict, not a great guy. Jamarcus Russell, kind of bottom of the barrel. Those are our fantasy guests, which is great.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah, I believe Jamarcus, after he got out of the league, got arrested a bunch of times for like codeine possession. He was really into the purple drink.
Purple drink.
Yeah, that was the good stuff. And I always said, if I ever, heaven forbid, I become a drug addict, but if I do, that's a drug I'm going to.
Can you do that codeine for the podcast?
I mean, that seems just like, it's like a summer drug, you know. They talk about, they put Jolly Ranchers in there. I could totally be down with that. Like, I would be bragging and party going down, my druggies.
All right, Berlew, the 2020 shenanigans showdown. Become a drug addict for a month.
Yeah, my life is ruined, but I got 20 points, baby. Woo!
I know we say this probably for 3 years now, but we do have to, come March, revamp something. Figure out a format that works for us. Years ago, we did a... we tried to do a... It was, the idea was great, and I think if this was our only gig, we would have probably paid more attention to it, but it just kind of became very hard. We made a yearly challenge where there were certain points for challenges and whatnot, and there was a big 50-point challenge, and you basically had to do these crazy things and add up points, and the winner at the end of the year would... You still never went to Medieval Times. You moved.
Yeah, we never got our schedules together. Well, it's not the rain. I know there's Medieval Times down here, so if you ever end up in Georgia, I'm like, come here. Get over here, you.
You know what?
I'm going to eat me a turkey leg.
If anything, if you and Izzy go, I will Venmo you the the price of admission so I can hold up to my end of that loss.
All right.
But we tried to do it, but I think that the length of time was the killer for me. I know personally, like, to stay motivated for a yearly challenge is very hard. If it was 30 days, even a week or something like that, I think I would have put more effort into it.
I still regret I never did the 6 Smirnoff Ices that field goal challenge.
Yeah. It was is that what I challenged you to? What it was, drink 6 and then go pick field goals? Was that what?
Yeah, it was to down a 6-pack of Smirnoff Ices and then kick 6 like 19-yard field goals.
That's
which I wanted to do so bad. And but it was one of those, we could never get the timing. I bought footballs for it. Like, I had to learn how to kick footballs because I was trying to at first. I'm like, uh-oh, this ain't going well. But
are you telling me the time on your soccer team, your IT soccer team, didn't provide you enough kicking power to kick field goals?
Like, if I had to hit it into a soccer goal, then I would hit it 20 feet over the goal.
Right.
But the second there's a goal post, I somehow get it 20 feet under the goal post.
A ground ball.
It's like 10 feet tall. It's not even ground balls. It's like under the ground.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's still a funny challenge to me. I also wish that you would have. didn't I challenge you to read like a whole book and eat olive loaf for. Like a pound of olive loaf or something like that.
A pound of olive loaf was on the list, and if it got close, that would have been a consideration. The 50-pointer was to dress up like a Girl Scout or a Boy Scout and at least sell one package of cookies in the neighborhood. Which I'm like, there's no way I could go back to the neighborhood after that. So that was like absolutely no, wasn't going to happen. One, but.
Yeah, it's funny because I was challenged to marry somebody, and it's happening this May. I am marrying a friend of mine, so it's pretty interesting. I have to make sure all my paperwork is still around. I gotta check that out. But
it'd be great if you went through all that and like 3 months later, it's like, hey guys, funny story. You ain't nothing but boyfriend and girlfriend now.
I'm totally going all in. I am going to find the minister parking pass that it came with. I'm going to put it in my window. I am doing it all.
I actually knew a person. I used to work for her. She had somewhat a similar situation. She got out of a marriage because of a technicality like that.
Really?
Where it was like her second marriage. And like after. She literally said, like, 2 months in, she already knew, oh, my God, I made the biggest mistake of my life. Mm-hmm. And she got a call, I think somebody from the county, and just said, you know, there's nothing to worry about. There were some paperwork issues with it and all, but we're going straight now. You're married and whatever. And she's like, whoa. So technically, I'm not married right now.
Wow.
They're like, yeah, but we're going to... She's like, no.
Wow.
So technically, I'm not married now. They're like, well, yeah. And then she never went through it again.
Wow.
She basically said, stop the paperwork and refuse
That's hysterical.
Change room.
Now, what are you popping on your arm?
I don't know. I want to say it's a pimple, but it's not doing anything. So we'll come back to it later in the episode.
I wouldn't have noticed until all of a sudden I heard your audio go like, yeah, and then and then I look up and you're going hard on a mosquito bite or something. What, speaking of marriage and wives and stuff, what is your sleeping arrangement? Now, you have a dog, you have a cat, and you have a wife. So you have three pets. Oh, boom. Hey, I'm here. No. Aisha Ash.
8:42 in the morning here on the Z Morning Zoo.
Hi, Aisha Ash. I'm sorry. So you have a dog, you have a cat, you have a wife. You're a big guy. We're similar heights. What is your sleeping arrangement? Do you feel that you have equal stake in your bed?
No, I don't. I mean, it's pretty much been the whole time the situation. I mean, number one, Callie, when she is cold, she will nestle into my legs.
Yep.
Which is fine. Like, when I go to sleep, I'm like, all right, I got enough space or whatever. Every time I wake up in the morning, like, one leg is literally maybe an eighth of an inch away from falling off the bed, and the other one's just, like, right behind it. And she just keeps on burrowing into me. Wife is not bad. When we started going out, like, when I would stay over at her place, she had like a twin bed, and it was literally I was in the wall. There was nothing close to any kind of space. Like when she moved in with me, it was decent. And when Callie started sleeping in the bed, it was all right. I would say in Jersey, I don't know what kind of,
what size bed are you rocking? You're a queen?
We got a king now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We got a king now. Callie just steals it. That's a funny part. Like when I was in Jersey, it was a queen and we seemed to be all right, but I would still say I was kind of pushed into the wall. The worst was when I had to spend a little time with the parents, and that was like listed as a queen, but I think it's that kind of like twin/queen.
Yeah, I don't know.
There was literally like, you move a millimeter, you're smacking into the floor.
Yeah, especially with both your mom and dad in the bed. That is
I said, really, mom, dad, I could take the couch, but they would not hear it.
Get in here, buddy. Son.
We miss you, son. Get over here.
All right. So, yeah, I sympathize with every single thing you're saying. The reason I brought this up is because I was kind of writing the other day, and I even posted a little joke on Facebook. But my sleeping arrangement, we have a queen currently. I used to have a king bed, and I had to move back to my parents for a little while, and I saved the king mattress and whatnot, and there was kind of like a flood in the basement, and my mattress was kind of against the wall, and the bottom of it got weird. I don't know, so it kind of got kind of like
funky,
and I was like, yeah, I gotta throw this thing out. So we had when me and Alex moved in, we have a queen bed, which we have full intentions on upgrading to a king. Now I got a couple things going for me. I sleep hot, like I just run hot in general. Like I'm almost never cold in general. Just, I'm never really cold. Like I get chilly, but I'm never like freezing. I could go, it's been like 25, 30 today. I thought it was perfect outside. We're putting up lights and whatnot. I just have a coat on. So I sleep hot. Also I am just a terrible sleeper in general. I just don't sleep well. I wake up a lot, roll around a lot. I try to like put on audio to kind of go to sleep lately. That kind of helps a little bit. But so I got
like, what's your average sleep in a night? Are we talking like 6 hours?
I would say six. Right. I try to go to bed like usually 11, 11:30. But actual sleep wise, I would say 5.5, 6 hours maybe on a good night.
All right. All right.
I just can't fall asleep that well. And a lot of times I wake up and So I have now my wife, I give her a nickname, the hypotenuse, because she sleeps almost completely diagonal. Like it'll start in the middle of the night. We'll start on separate sides, and all of a sudden her feet will be basically where my feet are. Basically, if you could picture in your head, like a hypotenuse cutting a rectangle into two triangles. Okay.
Okay.
So now our feet are basically on one end, and she's spread out, okay, all the way to her end. Now, you throw in a 70-pound half English bulldog who decides that when he sleeps, he decides he has to expand as far as humanly possible. He also decides that that's convenient when his gas is starting to act up. So you take a guy,
which is generally often.
You take a guy who can't really sleep that well. You throw in legs from your wife taking up most of the bed, and then you throw in this expandable bulldog that is just throwing hot gas at you. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sleep is not an easy thing. I'm left with this rectangle, okay, that I gotta kinda exist in, and kind of fit in and close my eyes, and I'll be comfortable, but God forbid I have to move, it's over. Mm. Okay, like if I gotta roll over.
Like, I feel since you teach, you should go into like a geometry teacher's class and just be like, throw out that algorithm to him and see if he can come up with something for you.
Yeah.
Because I got a feeling like if you like square pi or something like that, you're going to have a good night's sleep.
Yeah. So like in the middle of the night, a lot of times I'll just be like, guys, it's it. And I'll take the bulldog and the wife's legs and kind of just try to snowplow him over to the other side of the bed. And then, of course, the dog's like, arr, he'll start growling at me. He doesn't like it. The wife doesn't even wake up. Like, I think I could just put her on a raft out in the lake, and she would be completely dead asleep. So
sounds like Shenanigans Showdown 2020.
Put wife on raft. So it's just
so Burley. We figured out the current goes out to the Atlantic Ocean, and all. It was not fun getting that call from the hubby.
So he, you know, and then you combine. I'm already hot. You combine him. He's like a furnace, like no pun intended. Like he's a furry, hot, just beast. Like if he's on your legs or your feet, you get hot. Like all of a sudden, so it's just it's not a great sleeping situation. We need a king bed. Very soon. I am getting not much sleep in this current regime that my dog and wife have conspired against me.
Like, how many times do you try to readjust before you go, all right, I'm sleeping on like the couch or something like that?
A lot of times I won't go on the couch at night. I will just get up like earlier and then go downstairs and like lay on the couch. Like, I'll make it to like, say I got to get up at 6:30, I'll make it to like 4 and be like, okay, I got to go down on the couch for a little bit. It's cooler. I got some room. And then, of course, like as soon as I leave, like the dog looks like he's in heaven. The wife is spread out, completely silent, sleeping like, like, you know, like two babies. It's just, it's very frustrating, very frustrating. Don't know what the solution is.
I think sleep ovation.
That's true. I forgot about that.
That should have been your commercial.
I know.
It's like, I didn't know what to do. I had a queen mattress, and my wife is just the splitter of rectangles. But thanks to the cooling action of sleep ovation, my dog's gas does not even penetrate me to get up.
I think you're onto something here. In fact, I was supposed to contact them a couple months ago about doing something else again. I think maybe this is the way in. This is the way back into my mattress modeling career.
Yeah, the individual mattresses will resolve your issues, Scott. It's very clear. And clearly, I'm doing the voiceover for this commercial as I'm spelling it out for you. I got to get a couple bucks out of this idea. Come on.
Well... So that's my conundrum. I'll let you know if there's any updates in the coming weeks. I don't think we're getting a bed anytime soon, considering it's the holiday season here and money's at a premium. But I will keep you guys abreast of what is happening in my sleep life, as I know you guys are tuned in, you are on the edge of your seat, and you are really waiting to hear the updates on that situation.
I'm just a little disappointed. I figure since you couldn't sleep, you could have gone out at 2 in the morning on Black Friday and got yourself a king size for about $300 less.
Get mugged, you know, beat someone down for a king mattress. I wonder if the mattress market really has a big Black Friday presence. I don't know. I've never seen a video on like the news like tonight at 7. Riots and sleepies.
Just see some 43-year-old woman giving some guy an elbow as she's grabbing mattresses and each arm and running to the counter. It's
a very violent pillow fight going on in sleepies.
Find 10 dead sheep from that Serta commercial.
yeah, right? So, all right. Let's shift gears and I think it's time to get to our guest of honor tonight, our guest. There's only so long I can talk about my sleeping situation. Plus, I got to go to bed soon. So, let's get to our guest here. All right, Mike. It is time to get a guest on the line. Now, worked with this guy many times, had him on a bunch of Verbal Shenanigans comedy shows, worked with him in various shows along the way. So he's a comic here from, I guess, the New York, New Jersey, Staten Island area, you could say. He's been around for a while, but the reason we're going to call him today is because he recently starred in a role on Martin Scorsese's The Irishman.
You know. Is that supposed to impress me or something? You know, I'm the Burles. I mean, you got to go a little higher than that. So.
That's your mark. You said you're the Burles. That's your watermark.
You know you can't bring your B-minus game when you're talking to me. I'm not sure Scorsese's done enough where he gets, you know, the thumbs up.
So acting alongside Pesci, De Niro, mm-hmm. Pacino, Harvey Keitel, mm-hmm. none of that means anything to you.
I mean, it adds to get him closer, but I mean the full attention. I don't know.
All right, well, let's let the interview decide and see if he
yeah.
maybe something arises in you that interests you or sparks a question maybe I don't know. We'll have to find out, but I figured we'd bring him on. Really want to get down to like kind of what this whole experience was like. So let's get Jeff on the line. Mike, Jeff, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
What's up, Jeff?
How are you, everybody?
All right, Jeff. You know, I was just saying it's amazing to talk to both the worst fantasy baseball player and someone in The Irishman at the same time.
And who would that be? Because, you know, I'm a phenomenal fantasy baseball player.
You are the worst I've ever seen.
I'm good. Dude, I won it this year. I won that other league, which is more competitive because there's 12 teams in it.
Yeah, but your history is pretty atrocious as far as your trade offers.
Did you mean you make trades?
Yeah, your trades.
Yeah, okay. Well, you don't give your best offer up front. Everybody knows that. You know what I am? I'm a shrewd dealer.
Yeah. You are the kind who would offer Bobby Bonilla for Mike Trout straight up.
Well, I want to see if you took it, then I'd win that trade. But then you can count it.
He's still in the contract. That counts. He could get some points.
That does count. That's right. You want Bobby Bonilla? I'll give it to you.
So, Jeff, first off, thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
No worries.
So, the real reason I wanted to get you on was...
You're breaking up a little bit. I'm in Broadway Comedy Club right now, and then I'm going over to Caroline. So you just need to speak a little louder.
Here, I'll give you some more volume right now.
Now you sound good. Now you sound good.
Listen, pal, I always sound
good. Hey, you're just dropping club names there, by the way.
I know, yeah. Way to name drop three clubs.
Wait till I start dropping names. This is just the beginning, Mike. Scott knows me. You don't know me.
Yeah. So, as I was saying before, I've worked with Jeff many times along the years, but the real reason to bring you on, Jeff, is because clearly last Wednesday, a little movie, a small independent movie, small budget movie called The Irishman dropped, and I don't know who you slept with or who you paid off, but you ended up getting a role in the movie, and we kind of want to break this whole experience down. I think it'd be fun for the listeners to kind of get an idea of how the hell this all happened.
Wait, you want what story now?
Yeah, man. Well, first off, like, you got to start from the beginning. Like, I know you dabble in acting and whatnot. You clearly do comedy, or what you call comedy, all over. But how did this all begin?
I've done acting, and I did a couple of commercials, and basically it was just commercials. And then I was doing stand up on this TV show. It was not a big show. It was something that is seen basically in the five boroughs, but primarily in Manhattan.
Right.
And the reason why I did it is because it filmed on a Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and I didn't have any spots until 11 o'clock. That was so I had time to kill. I was like, I'll do my set. I'll run some different material, and then I'll go to do my spot. And that's all I thought about it. Now, on this show, it was me, Gary Pastore, who's been in a bunch of stuff and winds up getting cast in The Irishman, mm-hmm. Vito Facone from Vito and the Elegance, who's been in a bunch of Scorsese. That's one of Scorsese's favorite guys. And this guy, Johnny P, he is he's the host of the show. I filmed the show, and that's it. This is in January, as in February. And I never thought about it again. I never saw it, and never again. I'm driving down to Atlantic City in August, end of August, and I get a phone call from, at the time, the manager of Broadway Comedy Club was this woman named Gina Savage. And she goes, hey, Ellen Lewis has been calling all the clubs in New York City looking for you. And I'm thinking immediately, this is my two asshole friends, Kevin Goatee yep. and Andrew Lee. One of these two guys are playing a prank, okay? And I don't believe it. And so I called one of my other friends. I called this guy, Kevin Dombrowski. He's a comic. He's an actor. I go, Kevin, just by the off chance, is there really going to be a new Scorsese movie? And is there really an Ellen Lewis? He calls me back 10 minutes later. He's like, dude, pull over to the side of the road. Call. It's legitimate. I call. Of course, it's around 7 o'clock. Nobody's there. I come home from Atlantic City. Next day, I say, I'll call them back just in case. But if they're really serious, they'll call me. So usually my mornings are by 9:30, I'm up. I'm drinking a cup of coffee, watching Andy Griffin, and the phone rings, and it's Ellen Lewis's office. And I'm like, and they're nice to me. And that's how you know they're serious, right?
So
they ask me, hey, are you interested in reading and being in the new Martin Scorsese movie? And I'm like, nah, I'm a little busy. And I'm like, of course I am. Are you out of your mind?
I got a spot.
I've only seen this episode of Andy Griffin like three times. Come on, I got to really dive in.
Right.
I got a spot. I tapped out 15 tonight. Sorry, can't do it.
Like, can you call me back? I got to see what happens to Opie in this episode. Right? this is the episode where he loses his virginity, so I really want to see this episode. And the best part, he's only 8.
So now they're just seeing you do, like, they're just viewing you do stand up, or was it
The backstory is Ellen watches this fucking show. I can't believe I have all the shows in the world. Ellen watches this show and sees me on it, likes my character, and wants me to come in. So they send the script to my agency, they forward it over to me, and this is like now on a Thursday, I finally get the script. So I have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to learn the lines. And the whole weekend, I had spots. So I'm running the spots with comics. And those are the people you want to run stuff with, because if you stink, if you say something weird, they'll make fun of you.
Correct. So, correct.
Right? Yeah. So, right. I mean, if you were there, you'd make fun of me even if I did it great.
Of course. Okay? Of course.
So I felt really confident going into that audition. And, she was like, you were great. I read for this character, Johnny. But it was one scene, and it's the scene where he introduces Frank Sheeran to Skinny Razor, which is played by Bobby Cannavale. She goes, "Would you be interested in a part, more scenes, more screen time?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I think I may be interested in that. It's a union guy." And so she goes, "Here." So she's like, "Here, take the script and take about 20 minutes and you know learn it." Now, I had just practiced for 4 days with that other thing. I had 20 minutes to learn this. And you know what? I am not that good. So so I go and I'm reading it, and I'm overacting. And she's like, she goes, "Stop with the blinking and the long pauses." she's a very direct woman. And she goes, "Just do it the way you did it before." And I did. And she goes, "Excellent. Excellent." So I go, "So am I in? Do I get the part?" She goes, "Well, I have to show it to Mr. Scorsese."
Jesus.
And right, so now, this is the end of August, beginning of September, and September goes by, October goes by, November goes by, and I'm like, what the hell here? And the whole time I'm in touch with my agency, I'm like, is this happening? Are they passing on me? You know, and they're like, no, they definitely want you. They're interested in you. There's been a couple of rewrites, a couple of schedules. You know, just keep September open. That's what he kept on me. Just keep September open. Finally, it's the day after Thanksgiving, and I haven't gotten anything. So I go in the morning. I text in bold letters. I say, "Are they doing this? Is this happening?" And about 2 hours later, I get a phone call. You know, a text back from him. "Call me when you get a chance." And right then, I knew that they're casting me. And sure enough, they made an offer, and they sent over a contract, and I wind up getting it.
Well, it'd be great if they send Scorsese the wrong part of the tape, and all, and he just like, "I love the way this guy blinks and just overacts on everything."
Yeah, he looks right where he looks directly into the camera, and right, yes.
I really want it raw, like High School Musical kind of raw here, the Irishman.
But, and that, you know, it's so surreal, because, like, as soon as, you know, I said, "Yes, you know, I'm available, I'll do it," the contract is sent over to you immediately, I mean, within minutes, and I give my approval on it, and within 45 minutes, you are getting contacted by everybody in production. You know, that I remember it was this guy Jeremy. He was the point guy. He tells you what's going to be going on. This is the itinerary. We're going to send you over the script. We're going to, this is when you have to go in for pictures. This is when you have to go in for costumes and everything. And everything is done really, really quick. I mean, that's why they said you have to be available the month of December. You know, you have to be, you know, for reshoots, all kinds of stuff that goes on. So I remember the first day that I'm shooting, it was, I mean, I'm waking up because you had to be on set, I think by like 7 a.m. And I'm out in the Bronx. And I'm coming from Staten Island, and I just remember it was just so surreal because I'm listening to the radio and I hear one of my friends on the radio, and I'm going to shoot a Martin Scorsese film. I'm like, how is this my life?
Yeah,
you know, it's like I'm listening to one of my pals on the radio. I'm going to shoot a movie. I'm like, 10 years ago, I never would have thought this. You know, so I get there, and I was just happy. Like, I thought, like, it was pretty impressive, like, what the extra pen was like. You know, they had lots of extras, and it's all guys that look like me. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm here,
yeah.
and nobody's treating me nice. Okay, it's the exact opposite of when I went to read, and you know, like, I give my name, like, you're not on the list. And I go, I spoke to Jeremy, and Jeremy, like, hold on. Jeremy comes within 2 seconds, like, "Sorry, you're not here." And I go, and they have a trailer for me.
Wow.
I have my own trailer. My wardrobe is waiting for me. There's water waiting for me. The script, the day shooting night. I mean, it's a whole different scene. You know, the extras, it's like a cattle call. You know, we're away. You know, if you want food, we'll go get it for you. I'm like, oh, I'm good. I can get my own food. I'm fine. Like, you know, and so I had to go into hair and makeup. You know, they cut my hair. They shaved off, like, my goatee. You know, they make you look completely different. And now it's time to shoot. And it's just, and the thing is, they had stand-ins for, like, us. Because, you know, I was considered principal. So they have stand-ins. So it's like, once they're ready to shoot, that's when we would go in. So we shoot the scene It's the scene where Pacino is giving that big speech at the rally,
right,
about solidarity.
Yep.
And then they're like, okay, we're gonna take a few minutes. We're gonna shoot this other scene. We just need you know to change some stuff around. You can go hang out at your trailer. I'm going back to the trailer, and then a PA runs over to me and says, "We need you. You need to go to a rehearsal with Mr. Pacino." So now I have to go do this rehearsal with Pacino. It's like me, Pacino, and one other guy, this guy Bernie, who is Scorsese's main guy. So we're running the scene. Now, this is a scene that part of it got cut out, and part of it's still in the picture. It's a scene where Pacino has the red hat, and we're walking through the crowd.
Right.
And we had the scene initially starts off with us getting out of a car, talking, and then we converge on this big mob of people.
So now, before all of this, there's no like, this is just, you know, the lines, and they're just okay. Now act with Pacino. That's it. They just throw you into it.
Right. They needed me for 45 minutes to just rehearse this one scene. And a lot of it is just how we're going to walk, what we're saying, back and forth. So we're running it a few times, and Pacino's like a very nice guy. He's very, very personable, and I start to feel comfortable with him. So now I'm like, you know my personality, Scott.
It's
a terrible person. So I go to Pacino. I go, Al, when we shoot this, is that the way you're going to do it? And he goes, that's the way I do it. I go, you're happy doing it that way? Like, that's the way you're going to actually do it on the film? And he goes, look, I've been doing it for 50 years. How many years have you been doing it? And I go, about 25 minutes. So we run the scene. And the scene takes maybe about 2 hours or so to run. And then afterwards, he comes up to me and just like smacks me in the stomach and goes, good job. Nice. Good job. Oh. And then like, I'd see him on the set. And then it was that scene where we're getting yelled at. That is, that took 2 days to film. And, he was just like, just like no downtime. Like, he always wanted to engage in conversation. Just
right.
Super cool. Where De Niro was a different kind of guy. He was more cerebral, quiet. There was a time where it was just me and him. We were standing there, and they needed, to change the lens. And she said it should take 5 minutes. It took like 10 minutes. I'm standing next to him. He's standing next to me. Not a word is spoken. You know how uncomfortable that is?
Yeah. So now when you're doing this scene with Pacino, is there nerves? Is it kind of just still surreal where you don't even really think about it till after it happens?
I was never nervous once. I get more nervous doing a stand-up set than I did on any set I've ever been on, any shoot I've ever been on, because you can always redo it.
Right.
And you're with other people. But it was surreal because you're looking like there's a scene where we're in an office and he is directly like across the way and I got to act off of him. and you're looking like, I think to myself, he's not Michael from The Godfather, but he's more the Devil's Advocate. He's more John Milton from The Devil's Advocate, and he still has that voice. And this is what you're thinking, but then when you're doing it for real, you're just like into your character. You're into like, okay,
yeah.
The way that's the way I was briefed on that scene was we're hanging around, and the first AD on the set comes over to me and two other guys. And goes, Martin wants to meet with you three guys. So we go onto the set, and that's where we go to have this meeting on the set. Scorsese walks in, and the first thing he says, "Where's Jeff?" And inside, my heart dropped. It's like at that point in the world, Scorsese was looking for me. He knew me, and I put my hand like, and he goes, "Jeff, you fucked up." And now Al's going to jail, and this is how he, this is the scene with about Bobby Kennedy, going to put him in jail,
right.
And that's how he kind of, and he was, and we, like I said, that scene took 2 days to shoot, and every decision you made, everything you did, he made it seem like it was the greatest decision you can make, and that was the specialness about him.
Wow,
he made it seem like any choice you made was the right choice. But let's try it again. Let's do it a different way. That's what he was like. So, and that's the thing where he's like, you know, you dumb motherfucker, you know, and he's going, and this is like, that's how Scorsese briefed you for that scene. So we're walking, you know, there's a lot of like, they have to change a wall. They want to try different things. We shoot it a completely different way. So we're walking. And think about like someone's basement with this wood and all this type of stuff. Because we filmed that scene in Marcy Avenue in a sound studio in Marcy Avenue in this big giant armory. So it's on the set. It's very well lit, but everything else is not. So I'm walking and all of a sudden I feel someone push me and it's Pacino. He fell and tripped over a piece of wood. So I kind of like fireman catch, like I turn around real quick and I see he's stumbling. I fireman catch him. I have like my two arms up, right? And he's like, my hero. And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, your hero. I go, now I'm not such a dumb motherfucker, right? And so, yeah, so, I mean, that was pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So at any time while they're filming, do they understand that you know, kind of limited in your acting? Do they give you ever extra tips, or do they just feel like we cast you, you should know what you're doing?
We cast you, and you should know what you're doing. And at no time did I ever feel out of place. I was able to hang in there with them with no problem. Again, when you feel unencumbered, when you feel very like liberated and free, when you really don't care, that's when I think your best stuff comes out. Like, you want to do a great job, but when you're not afraid to take chances, when you're not afraid to take risks, you know, creative risks, that's when I think, you know, things come out. And I think that's what a good director does as well, besides the way he shoots it.
So now, how long total were you on set?
On and off for the month of December.
Okay, so it's about a month. So as all this, you know, obviously post production, editing, everything that's going on, are you kept in the loop at all on what?
Yeah, we get updates. You know what's going on. There was at one time they were considering changing the title of the film to "I Heard Your Pink Houses," and then I knew about the whole back and forth between Netflix and Scorsese and De Niro about wanting, you know, because Netflix didn't want to release it to the theaters. They wanted a theatrical release so it would be eligible for the Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. The back and forth, because the theaters wanted a 90-day exclusive. Netflix would only, you know, we'd say we'll give you 45, and no one budgeted. The theaters say, well, how about 60? And they wouldn't move off of 45. And that's why they're like, that's why the movie wasn't released in any of the major theaters, all in independent theaters.
Yep.
And in New York City, it was they did it at the Belasco, which is a Broadway theater, which it last had a network in it, and it sold out. They sold $55 a ticket, and they sold out.
So now you see, when did you actually see the final cut of the film?
They sent me tickets for a premiere in Staten Island, you know, because it was independent. They asked me where I wanted to go see it. I could have gone see it at the IFC in the city. But this theater that me and my wife always go to watch movies, you know, it was playing there. So they sent me 7 tickets, and then, like, my family and friends, I think they bought out the rest of it. And everybody came that night, and we saw it there.
Nice.
And one thing I forgot to ask, with Pacino, they de-aged him now. Did he have, like, dots on his face while you're acting with him?
Yes, very good. Yes, him and, I didn't work with Pesci, I worked with De Niro and Pacino, and they had these green little dots, and when they were filming it, on the tress, you would have a camera, and then they had a computer, and those green dots, the computer would pick up those green dots, and you know, if you look at De Niro's eyes in the movie, they're blue, you know, but right. When you're looking at them, they're still brown, you know. Everyone's like, oh, the makeup. There was no makeup.
I know. I saw that too. It's ridiculous.
It was all CGI.
Now, you didn't ask them if they could have made you look better.
I thought I looked pretty damn good. Yeah, here's the funny thing. It's like, we'd be shooting during the day, and then at night I'd have spots. And I would, and so like I'm going to hair and makeup at the end of the day, and I ask them, hey, is there any chance you guys can do my hair and make me look back to normal? And they were just so super nice. These are people who have gotten Academy Awards for hair and makeup. and I'm running out to do a spot at Greenwich, and they're making my hair look good. And then the girl around, let me fill in your eyebrows to make you look better, you know? Yeah, they were just so, so nice. As long as you were nice and professional with them, they would do anything. They were really a great group of people.
That's awesome. So personally, I thought the movie was fantastic. I thought it was a different approach for Scorsese. I thought it was a slower burn. I thought it was it didn't glorify the mom life. It kind of like stuck with one character and saw like everything kind of fall apart. I kind of liked that. What did you?
It's not about the mob.
Right. Exactly. What were your thoughts on the film?
I'm saying again.
What were your thoughts after you saw the film? After you saw the first one,
I loved it too. I loved the book. I thought the book was really, really good. You gotta remember, the movie is more about between Hoffa, the government, and then the role the mob plays in that relationship.
Right.
You know, that's why it's like, who really is the lead here? Is it really De Niro, who's the Irishman, we're looking at through his eyes? Was it Hoffa? And it's the relationship between...
Shit.
Basically, you know, like, if you think about how popular or known Trump is today, that was Jimmy Hoffa back in the 50s and 60s. To figure. And then today, most people don't, you know, aside from this movie, don't know who he is.
Yeah.
Or what he did.
Hmm. Now, when you look at the movie, you know, is it the same like when you're watching like one of your sets and all, you're critiquing yourself like, I could have done this a little bit better, or I could have
a little bit more? Not at all. Because you watched, you've done it so many times, and you have the best eyes watching it, that they're taking the best out of you. Like, right. They're getting the best out of you. So I was very happy with the way, I looked on it, how it came out, how the guys I worked with, I thought they did an amazing job at it.
That's awesome. I mean, you're going to be looking now, going forward, you throw this on your resume. I'm sure, probably like many of us, you grew up watching all of these films and loving them and watching them over and over again. So what do you got going forward? Obviously, clearly you're going to keep doing stand-up. And are you? Does this give you motivation to push acting even further, to try to really go with that? Or what are your plans for the future here?
Yeah, I have another movie coming out in 2020. I got recommended from that movie, from the people who did this.
Awesome.
And it's a different type of movie. It's actually a much smaller, I think everything's going to be a smaller budget movie than The Irishman. But the movie's called Hungry Saints. It starts in February, hitting the festival circuit, and I think hopefully by the spring or summer it should be released in theaters. But it's a very international movie. It was filmed basically all over the world. I filmed it in New York City, right by Madison Square Garden.
That's awesome, man. Jeff, it's fun to hear, man. It's always fun to see your pals get good opportunities, and obviously, clearly, this was a above and beyond good opportunity. And watching it on, I guess I watched it mostly Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, and then finished it on Friday. And just seeing your face there is just kind of a surreal thing. So I can't imagine what it feels like to be you or your family or pursue all this and this opportunity come along. So congrats on that, and thanks for giving us a few minutes on the show here. And I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Oh, thank you very much, man. It was a pleasure. I'll see you in New York or Jersey soon.
Absolutely, man.
Nice meeting you, Mike.
Nice talking to you. And one other question. Will you have new demands when you return to Tap House 15 for a Verbal Shenanigans show after this experience?
Say it again?
Will you have new demands when you return to Tap House 15 for a new Verbal Shenanigans comedy night?
Tap House 15 show is really one of those shows I look forward to doing every year. That is a great, great show. Treat you great. The audiences are amazing. You know, it's, and he always books like people like I know and friends on that show. That's, I love that show.
All right. Well, just make sure you bring De Niro and Pacino along with you next time, and I'll let you headline.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Jeff, good talking to you. I hope you get better at fantasy baseball before the season begins, and I'll see you soon. All right, bud?
Yeah. Take care, guys. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, man.
All right. The Burles. Do you think any interest was piqued? You know, as a, I know being named the Burles is a high achieving point in your life, but what about being?
That is true.
What about if you were asked to be in a Scorsese film? Where would that rank in your life as far as achievements?
You know, I mean, it'd be a nice little footnote. I mean, when I die one day and they're talking about my life, I mean, maybe that's the eighth item you bring up. But eighth, you know, yeah, I mean. The sky's the limit. I'm not saying I've done 1 through 7 yet,
but
I feel the Scorsese film would end up 8th, and it would make the top 10, so he should be honored.
So your life is really about to take a crazy swing soon, according
yeah.
to... Right,
yeah, just... I'm sure it's about to happen. I don't know what's thinking. any minute at all. Every once in a while, I just open the front door. I'm here. You know, let's do this.
So really, like, the first 40 years of life were just like pre-planning for this crazy second act that's coming.
It was a very long spring training, and I'm ready for the real games now.
I'm just curious, where, what do you think 1 through 7 might be? Like, what are some of the events that,
I don't know. I mean, I feel transdimensional travel is in there somewhere.
Really?
I don't know if it's because of superpowers or I invent something, but I feel I will end up somewhere where I'm like, okay. This ain't bad.
All right.
And so, I'll be telling people this is better than a Scorsese film. They're like, oh yeah, I agree.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's one. So I'm really curious to see what the hell else could be, to be in that other 5.
I mean, time will tell, Scott. I mean, we got plenty of time, and I've already established 7 great things. Well, now 6 will be a surprise for the
okay.
Our
so, audience. So, I mean, you've been running a lot lately. Maybe winning the New York Marathon, you know, against you, you and like 3 Kenyan guys, like battling it out to the last minute, and then you cross first, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna keep up with them for a while, and then around mile 25, I'll be like, guys, you know, it's been real fun, but you know, now I gotta start this marathon for real, and I just take off like,
you're gonna show them, and then boss.
I'll be like running backwards, just doing finger guns at them as I go past the finish line
backwards, going pew 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 to the Kenyan guys that are running 4.5 minute miles.
Exactly.
All right. Well, I mean, I can envision it. I know it might be hard for our audience to envision this, but I can picture it clearly. I could see it.
Easily.
So, Jeff Paul and the Irishman. Should probably hit record. All right. Jeff Paul of the Irishman. Jeff Paul, and also a very funny comic. So go check him out. But I actually watched the movie a little bit again this morning. It's kind of like, I don't know, I like just putting it on and kind of observing different things and watching Joe Pesci and Pacino and kind of figuring out what's going on. It's a good movie, man. I really
enjoy
it.
Feel now that we've had this interview, you had the insight where you can kind of, now I know what he was going for in that scene. Uh-huh.
A little bit.
He had a little angst in there. Oh, okay. Now this changes the philosophy of the flow of the movie stupendously.
Exactly. And I like that you just used the word stupendously.
Well, you know, I mean,
when's the last time you used that, like, seriously? Like, you ever used stupendously in a sentence? Like, were you, like, you know, like, right before you asked your wife to marry you, you were like, I'm stupendously in love with you?
No, I don't think that at all. Maybe in a joking manner, I probably said something was stupendously stupid just because the S's come together so well.
I feel like that's a word that might be kind of dying out of the English language. When's the last time anybody's ever said stupendous?
I'm trying besides to think.
30 seconds ago.
Like a lot of these movies that or a character that's like over the top, that seems like a good go-to word and all that. Stupendous, spectacular, something like that. Overly zealous.
But you've been watching that Killer Unicorn movie again?
No. You know, I think I got it from Matt Hardy, the wrestler. He had a gimmick where he was like over the top, and I think that was something he used a lot.
Killer Unicorn, and one guest that never made our his interview never saw the light of day.
Nope.
He was a little graphic for our show. A little
just a tad.
A little too much.
I mean, I don't even know how to describe to the audience well, given the vision of what he was going into.
You don't have to.
Yeah. No. Imagine a boxing match, but not hitting faces.
Yes.
That is about the best way I can do it, where if you're driving at 8 a.m. and you have kids in the back, the kids won't figure it out.
Yeah.
But you're in the back of your head, and like 5 minutes later, you're like, oh.
An old-time boxing match with old leather gloves.
Yeah. A lot of mushy sounds from the punches is what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. That wasn't a good one. Sorry, Killer Unicorn guys. Yeah, go check that movie out, I guess. But no.
Yeah.
But what we got?
Well, Scott, as you know, my wife is the uber Christmas lady that she is, and as you know, I am a huge dog lover kind of person. I think we finally found the event that mixed our loves together perfectly.
Okay.
Yes. So this past yesterday, we did a 10K down in East Atlanta, and we were close enough to check out the botanical gardens. We go there every once in a while. And they had the dog Christmas parade in the botanical gardens.
Wow. Now, was this expected or unexpected? Like, you knew you were going to this?
We somewhat talked about it because, I mean, obviously it depends on how we feel after the race. I mean, as I brought up before, lately I've been having a couple of issues with knee soreness where a lot of times after I'm done running, I'm like, I just want to get back and relax the knees or whatever. But we figured it was close enough. We were in a pretty decent mood, and we're like, all right, we'll see a couple of dogs there. I would say nice guesstimates. I'd say close to 200 dogs were in this garden, and every single one was dressed up Christmassy. Wow. Every single one was a dog that was like, oh, come pet me. I do believe that could have been the most nirvanic combination of things that made us a happy couple.
Now, when you guys are, after observing this, because, you know, she's ridiculously into Christmas, you're distracted by anything with a tail and four legs. Did this like spruce up like emotions, raw emotions in you and passion? Were you guys like, oh my God, like this is love? And like, did you just have passionately hold each other when you got home or?
Oh yeah, we went downtown. Yeah.
Okay.
We definitely did that after that event. No.
That's what I mean.
Anything that went from the tiredness of going 6 miles and going through that event to there, it just, anything that was on my mind was gone.
Okay.
It was just, oh, this is wonderful, this is perfect. And she loves dogs just as much as me, so that added it to her. But
wow,
all the persons were coming up. Not only were they having like a dog kind of show, everybody was dressed up in Christmas stuff. Like, dogs and their owners dressed up as Santa and Rudolph, or a Christmas tree, or a reindeer, or tons of elves on top of all the lights that were around in the garden. It was possibly the most magical way it was like the first time ever I could say, I can guarantee me and her will not get in a fight for any reason whatsoever today for any circumstance. Like, she goes home and burns down the house. It's like, it's cool. I had a dog's
come up to me. Did you feel a little left out that you didn't have your dog?
No, just knowing how much my dog is an a-hole to other dogs. There's no way. Like, everybody, I mean, we had the pictures out where we can show the people, and everybody's like, oh, she's so cute and whatever. But at the end of the day, we just know it. Because as you might recall, the barbecue story, that was a nightmare for myself. And that was just having Callie for about 2 weeks. She has not changed her mind whatsoever when it comes to other dogs. I literally think Obi is the only dog she has been able to be next to and not have a problem. And I think it has mostly to do with the fact that Obi just thinks that all her barking is just play. And like, when she tries to do something, he would always have the leverage on her. He would just push her down or whatever. And always like, oh, this is fun. Where Callie's like, I'm mad at you. Stop doing this.
Right. Now, at any point, did, like, the police or anybody have to, like, be like, sir, you need to step back and let the parade happen. You can't lay in the middle of the parade route.
Yeah. I mean, the organizer came up to me, and they tried to explain. I'm like, no, it's cool. If they walk over me, I'm not going to have a problem. And I just need to keep my arms out so I have prime scratching capabilities for all the Christmas dogs that are coming down the road.
Are you protesting the parade? No, I just want to be in the middle.
I'm like that China guy who stood in front of the tank, except I'm like, keep coming.
You've heard of Tiananmen Square? Well, now Burlow protesting the annual Atlanta Pooch Parade is 10 times more intense. Now, did you have a favorite dog or owner dog combo where you're like, wow, that's brilliant?
I'm trying to think of like there was one dog. I mean, most of them were like sweaters for the most part. I mean, some were really dressed. I'm trying to think of anything like crazy out of the ordinary, but like one dog like came up to us like 5 or 6 times. That's like the most memorable thing, where it's like, oh, he remembers us, and oh, he came back for more scratches, this guy. I'm trying to think, like, plenty of like full humans dressed up as Christmas trees with blinking lights.
No half humans,
as they were like bringing poodles up to the judges or whatever. I mean they were all nice costumes, but it was like generic costumes. There was nothing where I'm like, oh my god, you spent months doing this. It's not like that dog show movie where you got like the most intense competition whatsoever. I think everybody was friendly enough to allow everybody to
enjoy everything. By the way, you see, a bulldog won the the big, what's that big dog show on Thanksgiving?
Westminster?
Yeah. A full English bulldog took it down. None of these foofy, hairy, long-haired dogs. A big, fat, massive English bulldog took. I don't know what the categories are to win that thing. Like, I really don't understand how one wins. Is it obedience? Is it look? Is it, I don't know what it is.
I believe it's like look, and they do the inspections to make sure like everything about the dog is natural, to look in their mouths. They'll check their behinds. They'll make sure they weren't fixed.
That's your job. That's your calling. You should be a professional dog behind examiner.
You think there's good money in that? I mean that
show is nationally televised. I mean every year.
I
mean,
I can't fathom there's much competition for that job. I mean,
I think this is it.
I gotta think people retire after a while. I've been doing this for 37 years and I've never seen a behind like that. Lord,
I think
from my lips to your ears, Lord,
I think this might be it for you. I think we have finally figured it out. You can walk around with like a clipboard and like an iPad, take pictures of the behind and kind of like compare it to past dogs.
Like, I'm walking around the neighborhood and going up to somebody. I'm like, I know you don't know me, but it's a little hint. You might want to, you know, shave like a third of an inch off their behind, you know, just, I mean, it's very nice, but it can get a little messy and all. I'm a professional. Don't worry about it. This is not weird at all.
No, nothing strange. I think that is a job for you, man. I really feel that might be all these years we've been doing these bits, trying to find you jobs, trying to see you extreme jobs or strange jobs or, you know, this I could see you being that judge that really like into it, like special glasses, like special gloves, like really everything kind of custom just for checking out dogs.
Like, you see me almost like a guy checking out a diamond. Like, I got that little mini...
A monocle.
Glasses, a monocle, where I'm like, I don't know. I think I see a particle in there. Now that's 0.2 points off of you, my friend. That's going to cost you.
I am 100% in on this. We can make this happen. We can start to look into what you need to do to go about doing... entering the workforce. But
I feel next week, as part of our bit on our Facebook page, you should put up 6 pictures of different dog behinds, and every week go, guess which one Burley will pick.
What if, like, we put up dog behinds and you you have to match them? Like, you need to tell us what breed it is, male, female, the age of it, and you got to see how close you can get.
And interesting and all, kind of like the rings of a tree.
Interesting. Exactly.
A dog Coleman is the soul to its life.
Exactly. But I think it's time to hang it up for this week, guys. It's time to push on out of here. Another fun episode. Berlew, anything to promote before we go?
I'll promote a local brewery here in Georgia in Villa Rica, Hickston Brewing Company. They've been open for about a good 9 months now, and they have some really quality beers. I was just in there yesterday trying out their Pumpkinton Ale, I believe they call it. It was very smooth and delicious. Very crowded in there. They have games. They have live entertainment every Friday and Saturday. Such a joyous environment. So if you're in the Villa Rica area, check them out on Main Street. Their name is Hickston Brewing Company.
Wow, you threw out joyous environment and stupendous on one podcast. This is a big day. This is a big day.
I got to show you that I bring the stuff since we're going into the prime 2020 year, my friend. I can't allow you to say to yourself, you know, Berlew is all right, but that vocabulary is a little short-ended and all. Maybe I got to, you know, check the bullpen to see who's warming up over there to be my co-host.
It's true. Yeah, so I guess I will quickly promote Ray B Incorporated, Ray B Entertainment, R-E-Y-B-E-E. Good guys over there. They get us a lot of musical guests over the years. We've talked to just a lot of cool people between Snow and Lucy Spraggan, and there's been a whole bunch. And they help us get some guests on the show, and they do a nice job of promotion for different musicians and whatnot, and their releases, and... basically, whatever they are working on, they help promote. They even got us the cat convention the one time. So they do a lot of different things. So that is Ray B. Inc. And I'm also going to promote the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show, our monthly show at Tap House 15. The new room is rocking. Seats fill up really quickly, but we are there December 19th with headliner Mark DeMeo, one of my favorite comics on the planet. Okay.
On the planet.
Very funny guy. Makes me laugh every single time I get to work with him. So, and that's that. And go watch The Irishman. Go watch The Irishman. It's a fantastic movie. Go look for Jeff, and a couple Jimmy Hoffa scenes and, check it out.
Now I know we're wrapping up here, but on a side note, as you brought up the cat convention, did you see remember the big cat that everybody was lining up for, little Bub?
Yeah.
Did you hear he died?
No.
Yeah, he passed away. And for what I understand, they're taking his ashes are apparently going to be taken up to space.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's an article that said, I mean, he didn't pass away, naturally. So we lost Grumpy Cat and Little Bub in the same year.
Oh, man.
And apparently, I don't know why, but, you know, he's getting cremated, and apparently some of the ashes are going up with, well, like, one of the next rockets.
Do you think that maybe it was his celebrity status just caught up with it? Like, he just he's drinking too much, partying still enough, like, Little Bub, you know, like, just too much.
I'm not that little.
Another
whiskey bottle.
Yeah, another cat gone too early, another rock star gone before their time.
And there's, like, some new cat coming in the way. He's like, I was everything before this thing was born. What the hell? You call that cute? You're no Little Bub.
I remember the day Little Bub left us. I remember it like it was yesterday. But I don't know. Rest in peace, Little Bub. Sorry that happened to you. But I guess that's it, Berlo. It's
sorry about that whole death thing, Little Bub. It's a really bummer thing to happen.
Yeah, as if the cat is listening to us in his afterlife.
Yeah, Little Bub did some bad stuff, so he's in hell listening to our next episode.
I also like the balls on me thinking that us promoting the Irishman is going to put more views on...
I never heard this De Niro
on a movie that features Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese. Yeah. Well, whatever. I'm sure it did. But guys, that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. We'll talk to you later. Peace out.
Spectacular.